Welcome to the Bloody Mary podcast, where we talk about all things horror while drinking a Bloody Mary. I'm Jesse.
And I'm Tammy. And we are totally married.
We got our Bloody Marys, and tonight we have with us director, producer, and head programmer of Screambox, Tony Wash, along with his wife, Meredith, who's a graphic designer, set designer, and producer in film. Welcome, guys.
Thank you. Thanks for having us. Good to see you.
Yeah, so just tell us a little bit about yourselves.
Well, I've been making independent movies for 20 plus years at this point. I went to Tom Savini's effects school back in 2004 to 2006. And while I was there, I made a lot of really cool friends that are effects artists now, that kind of helped me with my directing, being able to, you know, pull people in to work on projects that, you know, need practical special effects talent. And so while I was there, I made my first movie. It's called It's My Party and I'll Die If I Want To. It's a choose your own adventure movie that's very much like Evil Dead meets Night of the Demons meets Creepshow. And been basically making horror movies and working in the independent horror scene ever since. And then I met this beautiful lady and roped her into the insanity that is independent
roped
filmmaking.
Me in, yes. Yeah. Yeah, it's wonderful to find somebody creative and just, I wasn't necessarily in the film industry, but I've been in the events industry, which is a lot of production and just being creative, making Halloween costumes my whole life and, you know, just being creative. And once I met Tony, getting introduced to the world of film and production has been absolutely wonderful.
Yeah, that's awesome. You know, we have a similar story. I was, you know, I've been a filmmaker my whole life, you know, making horror films and everything. And I was working on a project, and then I was looking for someone to do
poster art.
And I was going on Facebook, and I found this artist, and I was like, "Hey," reached out to her to do some promo art, and here we are now.
Yeah, now we're married.
Yeah, and I do directing, producing, editing, and she does all my storyboards and all the behind the scenes stuff, craft service, props.
Yeah, anything. Our son does props and stuff too. He's a set designer for a local community theater, so he does stuff in the background as well. So.
Yeah, she always has a fanny pack on set.
I do.
Oh my god!
I have a Rescue Rangers bag for you know that's on my someone gets hurt and I'm like, Rescue Rangers bag, guys, this is where all the stuff is.
No one's got hurt yet, so we haven't had to use it. Well, what are your guys' favorite horror films and why? We have to ask every guest.
Yeah, that's the first question. What's your favorite horror movie and why?
This is a tough one for me. I am definitely not as avid as a horror fan as he is. You know, I hate to be as boring as saying Halloween, but it is such a big part of my childhood and falling in love with horror movies. I think Michael Myers is just one of the, like, he's just so simple and so scary. But the off the beaten path answer would be Night of the Comet. Me and my sister used to love that. And I used to want to run around an empty mall and I didn't care. If
with an Uzi.
Yeah.
That's obviously awesome.
In a cheerleading outfit, yeah. Of course. There was something about it that just was like, regardless of the world is ending and zombies were attacking, it was just like girly and scary at the same time. And my sister's 2 years older than me, and when we were in that kind of teen phase, I don't know, we were just obsessed with Night of the Comet. So
nice. I haven't seen that in such a long time.
Yeah,
I've never seen it.
You gotta watch that.
Whoa,
add it to my list.
Easy 80s.
It's a classic.
The girl who was the girlfriend in The Last Starfighter is the lead, and then her sister's Kelly Maroney, who was in Chopping Mall, blonde, curly hair, and they just play two sisters who, like, this comet comes, and everybody who's looking at it or is outside when it passes by, it, like, makes them disappear. They, like, turn into dust, and so these two girls are a few of the only people left in L.A., after this happens, and some of the people have turned into these like zombies, and so it's like they're fighting the zombies plus they're dealing with it being post-apocalyptic and all the crazy people that are still alive that think that they're God now. It's a fun 80s movie, mid 80s.
Nice.
Yeah, I'll have to add that to my list of to watch.
Well, what's your favorite horror film, Tony?
I got the top three, and I can never say them without saying them as a collective, because they're just ones that I could never put one above the others. And it's sh The Shining, Alien, and John Carpenter's The Thing. They're just, being a horror fan my entire life, literally since I was like a kid, younger than I should have been watching movies that I shouldn't have been watching. I've just always gravitated to the genre, and as soon as I saw those three movies at the times that I saw them, they changed my perspective on filmmaking, on the genre, on practical special effects work, on what atmosphere and production design can do to make a movie help the audience escape reality and become invested in the environment in the movie and the characters and the story. You look at Ridley Scott, just did such a wonderful job with Alien, and The Shining is such a simple concept that is just so terrifying because of the location and how Kubrick shot it, and how, everybody in that movie acted, and whether they were meant to be creepy or meant to be scared of being of the creepy people. It's just, and then The Thing is just, it's on a whole nother level of filmmaking, as far as I'm concerned. For 1982, it's just, it transcends just generations, as far as I'm concerned. If people watch that now and don't think it's impressive, they don't love the genre, in my opinion.
Oh, I totally agree. Yeah, I mean, if you like those movies or not, you can for sure say that all three of those create atmosphere.
Oh, for sure.
And like the atmosphere and the location is a character in itself. Definitely.
Yeah.
Well, being a married couple in horror, how did you two meet?
Oh, the good old-fashioned way, online.
Yeah.
On Same.
Bumble. On
Saw me
Bumble,
on
even.
Facebook. Hey.
Yeah. I was just online dating, unfortunately. Didn't want to do it, but finally took the plunge. And I don't know. It was one of those things where I was kind of like over it. I was like on so many bad dates
She
that
settled.
Yeah.
I but I remember telling my best friend, I was so busy and I had so much work due that week. And I was like, we're just going for coffee. I don't have time for dinner or to go to a bar. Like I just making it a quick coffee date. I was like, so not thinking it would turn into anything. And we shut the coffee shop down and we were there for 3.5 hours. And I was just so fascinated by what he did. And he was, interested in what I did. And I think when two creative people meet, there's so much to talk about and so much to explore. And it's not just like, I don't know. I think we both instantly knew, shut the coffee shop down. And
Yeah.
we wanted more. We were just, I kept saying intrigued. That was
Yeah.
like the one thing, instead of being like, oh my God, he's so cute or whatever. I mean, he is, and he
Ooh.
was, but
Oh,
like all
totally.
the typical dates, I just kept
Right.
saying, I'm so intrigued. And I loved that. Like it was more than just a physical attraction. It was like, I was just so curious about his life and what he
She thought
does.
my brain was sexy.
Brain.
Yeah. It was pretty cool, because I had like a pretty firm, like, belief in my head. Like, I had a mentality of, I need to find a woman who is going to appreciate horror, whether she's a diehard fan like me or not, can be determined, but like, she has to at least enjoy it enough to be willing to watch it, because that's all I do is watch horror movies, which she can attest to. And so when I met her, she had like pictures of her Halloween costumes on her profile. She actually catfished me because she was a drunk bitch Barbie one year with the mask and everything. It was great. And but she had a wig on with long brown hair, and I'm like, look at this girl, this beautiful long brown hair. And then I meet her, and she's got this short kind of haircut, and she's like, yeah, that was just a wig. And so, like, that combined with her saying, yeah, I do. I love House. I love Night of the Comet. I love Halloween. Terrified of Leatherface. Like, knowing that she actually understood some of the characters and wasn't just saying, like, oh, yeah, I like Scream. It was more than surface level. And we just hit it off and appreciated each other's creativity. And I remember the first time I helped you with that backdrop for that DJ. That there was a wedding DJ that hired her to build him like a backdrop
Trade
for
show,
like
like a
a
trade
trade
show.
show, yeah, booth. And she did this just really amazing setup, and it was all constructed with simple, lightweight material. And I was just really impressed at it, at how she put it all together as quickly as she did, and made it mobile so that he could take it apart and stuff. And then the first movie we worked on together was The Stylist, which our friends Rob and Sarah, who made the game show with us, they produced that in Kansas City. And so we went down and spent a few days working on that together, and she got the bug. You know, we were in this big old mansion that we were set decking to be Najara Townsend, the serial killer in The Stylist. It was her house. And she just was like, man, that was so much fun. And then she worked on Revealer, which is a movie that's on Shudder. She helped build the video store set, and
What I was actually hired for,
tell them
she
about,
stole
tell them
that.
about the best part of that. Have you seen Revealer by
Yeah,
chance?
we so the movies that we watched, we've seen Skeletons in the Closet, The Rake, we've watched The Revealer, and I've seen The Stylist. So Revealer, one thing that stands out to me is there's a shot where you can see the dildos in the case. That was my favorite shot. Okay, go ahead, sorry.
Sarah Sharp is amazing. I know she was the production designer on that, but I went down, and since I have a background in graphic design, they needed to fill the video store with fake 80s porn posters.
Oh yeah.
Perfect. That's awesome.
And this was the height of COVID. So my normal business, I do a lot of stuff in the wedding business and event industry. So events were shut down. So I'm literally going from designing wedding invitations to porn posters. Just a natural.
That's awesome.
But I mean, it was hysterical. We had to come up with like four fake names, and finding what a copyright free like nude images, and we just laughed and we had so much fun. I actually have to watch it again. It's been a while. I don't know how many of them actually made it, but there was four of them, and I just laugh. I'm like,
Yeah,
this
I think you see Soak Fest. I'm pretty
Soak
sure you
Fest
see
was one
Bedroom
of,
Inferno.
yeah,
I
I
do
remember.
remember seeing some and thinking they were a lot of fun. I just don't remember the names. Yeah.
Skeletons in the Closet's in the background in the front of the video store too,
Yeah,
which is kind of
I
fun.
made some really quick VHS boxes of skeletons so we can bring them down,
And
put
there's a
them to,
poster too.
but I just remember like calling the print shop, and I'm like, I'm about to send some files, much different than what I normally send you.
You're like, this is a weird wedding.
I mean, there's one where it's like full nudity, and I'm like, oh God,
Sounds
what
like a
is
fun
this?
wedding
Yeah. That's
to
awesome.
me. That does sound like a fun wedding. Right? Yeah.
Having to, when we first met, I had previously been married, and like no one in my life really liked horror movies, and I watched them by myself, and I didn't have anyone to like, and everyone like, oh, you like horror, like you either get, oh, that's so awesome, or you're like, really? I'm like, yeah, I fall asleep to it. I find the screams soothing. Like, what do you want? And then meeting him, I'm like, oh my God, I get to talk to someone and like get to be creative together. It's a lot of fun when you're, especially if you come from another place where you didn't get to be creative with a partner or they didn't like that sort of thing. Like that
It
is a
doesn't hurt.
requirement. I
It
needed to
doesn't
like
hurt that he's got this sexy ass beard. He's got that full
Sorry.
head of wavy hair you
Oh
want in
yeah.
Yeah.
The beard. So I was like, hey, did you ever think about growing a beard, maybe?
Yeah,
So
the beard's all her. If I
the
shave, I think it's divorce papers.
No, it would grow back. It's fine.
That's awesome. Well,
So how often do you guys work on projects together?
it's kind of sporadic. Better Luck Than Chuck was something that was developed over a while between the two of us, which we'll obviously I'm sure talk about that. But it started out kind of smaller, where I was working overnight at a water plant, and while I was doing that, I didn't have a lot of flexibility to do other stuff. So we would be asked to work on some of our film family's movies that they're producing. And so, they did a lot of stuff, including like an Amazon Christmas movie with Dermot Mulroney in it, and called Christmas Is Canceled. And they asked us to be the art department heads. And so, well, I'm also working overnights 4 nights a week, and she's still doing her wedding business because this was towards the tail end of COVID. You know, we were also then running the art department on this $3 million Amazon Christmas movie, and it was, you know, it's like we kind of just when people come to us and say, "Do you want to be a part of this and do this?" We have a hard time saying no because we want to be creative. And so it's sporadic. It's not like we do this full time. And now that I work for Cineverse and Screambox full time, it's again, it's not something where we can just be constantly producing stuff. But hopefully, once the game show is released and it finds its audience and they love it, that they will demand 30 more seasons, and we will be doing this every year for the rest of our lives, you know.
Well, I was a contestant on Better Luck Than Chuck, the world's first horror trivia game show, correct?
Woo-hoo.
Yeah,
Hell yeah.
TV show, game show. Obviously, there are, lots of people that do some sort of live event game, game show style formats, but we like to say that we're the first TV trivia game show. So,
Well, tell us about Better Luck Than Chuck.
oh, nice.
Oh, hey.
Nice. Nice. Cue card. I like it. So Tony was developing some projects with some other filmmakers and working with Bloody Disgusting and just talking about things. And then him and I talked about doing some stuff together and just brainstorming, whether it's a movie idea, like I have an awesome slasher idea that I would love to make, and who knows if it'll ever get made. But we always just talk about ideas, as you guys, I'm sure, do too. And he was talking to some filmmakers, and we were just talking about different ideas for movies and shows. And I looked at him and I said, "Why have they never done a horror trivia game show? I have been to so many conventions with you, and I just want." And again, I'm new to the world. I've definitely watched horror movies in my life, but I was never like a fan in the sense I had never been to a convention until I met him. I never, deep dived on some of these like Bloody Disgusting websites and all that stuff. I just liked scary movies essentially. But I said going to these horror conventions, it is mind-blowing how much knowledge and passion and excitement and just how much immersed all these fans are. I said, how have they never done a horror trivia game show? And so we started developing it, and then we talked about his characters, the widow and Charlie, hosting it. And that just, as soon as that came into play, the whole vibe of like a basement retro, it just started, it was all talk. And then I put a pitch deck together. And as soon as we started grabbing imagery and ideas and talking about different categories and, stuff like that, it just slowly developed. And we were lucky enough through Bloody Disgusting to get connected with Universal. And when Universal was interested in providing the trip for the prize, our first Zoom call with them, we were like, we're little Midwest filmmakers. They're gonna be like, they were so enthusiastic. One Zoom call turned into five, and they agreed. And so once we got the trip from Universal, it kind of just started spiraling from there. We got a crew together. Our co-producers, Sarah Sharp and Robert Patrick Stern, are amazing. They are just so, they're like a well-oiled machine. Once the production's in, in motion, they put all the pieces together. And I don't know, the rest is history. We, put out the casting call for contestants, and we were just blown away about how many awesome contestants or fans out there wanted to be a contestant. And so, yeah, it's.
Yeah, it was about a year of pre-production, development and pre-production, and then, you know, obviously we shot last March, so we're looking at just about a year ago we were shooting, a year next week, I believe. Yeah, I mean it, you know, I think the coolest thing about it is how well it came together. You know, I feel like when I look at my 21 years as a filmmaker and the fact that I've been working with Rob and Sarah now for 13 years. You know, we did High on the Hog with Sid Haig, and we did Skeletons in the Closet, and we did The Rake. We did the short film The Muck that went to a lot of bigger festivals, which was pretty great. But it's like all of those projects were before Rob and Sarah became this well-oiled machine. They were us learning how to produce things at that tier that is not the, hey, we're going to make a movie in our mom's backyard with our iPhones type of thing. You know what I mean? Which is how a lot of our earlier stuff and everybody's earlier stuff is. And so I still always looked at those earlier movies, and as much as I'm proud of all of them for getting us to where we are, I looked at Revealer and The Stylist and, you know, The Christmas Movie and Brooklyn 45, which they did with Tega Gagin and Larry Fessenden and so many people in that. And I'm just like, God, what I wouldn't give to have an opportunity to have Rob and Sarah produce something now with the experience and the equipment and the crew that they have assembled at this point. And so this was an idea that when Meredith pitched it to them, you know, they were blown away and they were like, this is great. This is something that has so much potential for like a perpetuity or perpetuity of creating more seasons that we really need to to start developing this. And so that enthusiasm just boosted our desire to make this happen. And so we went out and found money and found a way to make it happen, found a location and got it going, and can't be more proud of how it turned out.
And I think it was such a snowball effect of so many people wanting to be involved in like just so it's just different. A lot of these people have worked on movies, and some of them are, you know, a lot of crew don't only work on horror movies. They do Christmas movies, they do whatever. So I think they were intrigued by the act, not just the paying job, right? They were like, this is fun. This is cool. And I'd say all the time, we had so many wonderful people, and everyone gave 120%. And like, just like, oh, what if we do this? Or like, you know, building the buzzers. And we had such an awesome tech side, and we had a awesome creative side, and everyone gave it 120%. And we were so blessed. And
And it
we,
was a fun set.
it was,
It
it really
was a
was a
lot of
real lot of
fun to be
fun.
on. Like there was never, everybody did such a great job at their job that there was never a moment as a producer, as you guys know, there are those moments where you're like, oh my God, is this all going to fall apart? Or how do we overcome this hurdle? And this show did not have that, despite it being the largest thing that we've ever produced, despite it being the first thing that Meredith's ever produced, and despite the fact that we had tangibles that, or we, you know, we had things that we did not have any control over, the contestants. You know, we could have had contestants show up that were just completely unruly, or that you know, who knows what
Or didn't
it's,
show up. I mean, we
or
shot 2 episodes a
exactly.
day, and you know, if someone was late or someone didn't show up, or you know, there was so many variables, like he said, that were made that end of it a little like nerve-wracking, but it was also kind of like a high. It was like by day three, we felt like we got in our groove. It felt like we had shot 15 se or episodes already, and we were only on episode 6. But yeah, I mean, just so many pieces fell in
Yeah.
place,
That's
and
awesome when things go like that. It feels really good when that happens, like on mine, when just a project just goes and that is magical, and that's really cool that that happened on like that big level for you guys. That's really cool.
What was the biggest challenge getting that all put together?
I mean, I think honestly the whole thing. It was like yeah, because it's something that none of us have ever done before. Creating a narrative feature is such a smaller, which is such a fun, funny thing to say, but it truly is a smaller like animal to kill than hunting, to use that metaphor, than hunting something like an unscripted game show where you have, and this had, you know, the elements of narrative with the dual hosts that are characters. They're not people, they're characters. And then, you know, all the details of building the production, finding a location, actually constructing a set, which is nothing. I've never done that. I've always used a location that is, you know, existing. And then just the intangibles of these contestants. How do we coordinate bringing people from all over the United States? I mean, you're in Washington and we're in Chicago. So you had to fly out to Chicago without ever having met any of us before, stay in a hotel, and we had to organize all that. And it's just there was a lot involved. And since none of us had ever done it, I think there's always that tinge of fear of, is this going to be a failure? Is it not going to work out? And I can't even tell you how many moments while we were on set, despite me just saying to you that it was awesome, it was amazing, everything worked out great, it was magical, there were still a lot of moments that it was like, what are we going to do? Like our season finale, we were like determining how certain things would play out literally the day before. Like Meredith and I that night before were like, okay, how do we do this and how do we do this? And so there, I was literally writing the script for The Widow and Charlie on set the day of the season finale, and it's crazy how motivating all of that gets, you know, and yeah, I don't know.
Yeah,
I
working
kind of
under
want to
pressure
change.
definitely came through a lot. Some of the things we had to change on the fly, like to answer your question of like the challenges, we had a ton of categories we wanted to do, but they involved movie clips or, you know, still images. And then, you know, a week before we were trying to get rights and figure out legal and fair use versus not fair use. And that was a struggle because I would have loved to tell you that we had all of our categories and all of our questions locked and loaded, ready to go. We had them written. We had over 400 questions written, our wonderful trivia writer. But it was these categories I wanted to do that involved movie clips and whatever. And then we realized sort of right before the week before that our lawyers, you know, there was probably some fair use that we could have gotten away with, but it was our inaugural season and we didn't have a, you know, a network lawyers backing us that would be able to help us. So we ended up having to scrap a lot of things that we were excited about. So I think a lot of it, at least from like the production design, like I always joke that like even her cue cards, I joke that they were still warm as she was reading them because they out of the printer. Just because like we would at last minute like scrap a category or try to change something. And our technical director that ran the game board was amazing. Like everyone was so amazing at just, you know, kind of, you know, trying to go with the flow and just understand that things were fluid. And but again, it worked. It was challenging, but everyone was there with their A game. And yeah, I think it was wonderful. And even the contestants, all of you were excited and enthusiastic and, you know, respectful on set. And, you know, we wish we could have hung out with you longer. Obviously, we shot two episodes a day, so we kind of had to usher you out a little bit after you were done. But everyone, I mean, we have nothing but positive things to say. So it's so exciting. We're so excited to do more seasons. It gave us a taste of it. And you know, sky's the limit for future seasons.
You know, it's like from a contestant standpoint, I would have thought this is like the 10th season that you guys have done. It went so smooth. Like all of the stuff, the worries that you have, you know, I have as a filmmaker as well. But I came in there as a contestant. I was like, this crew is solid. Like everything is going so smooth. Everything is professional. Everybody's happy. Everybody seems like they want to be here. The set was amazing. Like it just went smooth and it was so much fun.
Oh,
Like
that's
so all
great.
those like fears or that you guys had, like didn't see any of it as a contestant.
Well, and again, I mean, that's a testament to the fact that my film family has been, and our film family now has been around and together working on things for many years. You know, the earlier films that we all worked on together were not a walk in the park, that is for sure. And you know, they were released, and I think that they look good, and I'm proud of each and every one of them. But all of those experiences got us to this point where we were able to put something together and understand what the pitfalls were before they happened, so that we could alleviate them, and work around them. And so, you know, there were certainly still things that were up in the air. You know, as she said, our game board designer, Joe Mahoney, he is a IT guy. He is not a film person at all, but he is her friend's brother-in-law and is a huge horror fan. And so he was at our Halloween party the year before we shot, And him and I were talking, and he mentioned to her, he's like, you know, I'd really love to help or whatever. And so we were like, is this something you could do? Could you build an interface that would enable us to import all of the questions into your program, along with having all the category screens? And so you're basically, you have six monitors, not including the one that you're using as your home page for yourself to control it all. And can you do all this? And can you? And he built the buzzers for us, which he'd never done before. He's like, I'm not an electrician, but I'll work on it and try. And he literally sat in his basement with like his 12-year-old daughter and built our buzzers for us and
Yeah, that's
programmed them.
awesome. That's cool.
Yeah, he's like one of those like guys who like to tinker, you know, like those people that will watch a YouTube and be like, I've never done this, but I want to learn, you know, how. And I think, you know, I think before we started, when we were just chit-chatting before you started recording, I was saying like, this isn't a major network-backed game show. It is like raw, real filmmakers doing it. And you know, we always compare it to a little bit to Remote Control, which I know was MTV and was a big network, but it isn't the shiny bright lights of, you know, Deal or No Deal or whatever, which are amazing. I love all those game shows. I literally used to watch game shows my whole life with my mother, and I love all those. But what I hope fans who eventually watch it, they appreciate that. The way they appreciate an independent film, they might be willing to ignore, you know, some terrible set design thing or something where you're overlooking that because you know the passion and what goes behind it. You know, we're happy to tell these stories that, you know, our technical director learned how to build the buzzer. I think that's awesome. And I think anyone who appreciates creativity and going out there and, you know, not necessarily working with Hollywood people or whatever, where it's like we're doing it. We're gonna figure out a way and put the right people in the right place.
It's
And
scrappiness,
yeah.
but you know, we don't have money to solve the problems. So we have to use tenacity and ingenuity to solve the problems. And that's no different than any independent filmmaker. And that's what
Yeah,
I love so
for
much
sure.
about the independent filmmaking scene and just the bevy of talent that comes from that area of filmmaking.
Yeah, that my son and I, we do a lot of, you know, building. So our thing is always like, sure, we'll do it. We don't know how we're gonna figure it out. Like, I'll build an 8-foot tree because I thought, yeah, that would be good. I don't know how it's gonna happen, but we'll make it happen. And it, you know, a week before it's done, you know, like that's kind of how we roll.
Yeah.
I think that's how I think that's almost the drug of being creative, right?
Yeah.
It's that I don't know how, but I know I'm like creative enough to figure it out. And like when I make Halloween costumes, that's how I am. It's like no clue how this is going to be, but I think building it is more fun than even wearing it. You know, it's like, it's, yeah. So I totally understand that.
Well, and
Especially
I
when you get that moment where you're like, I don't know, I don't know. And then all of a sudden it comes together and you're like, oh my God, I'm so proud. Like,
Yeah,
get that
totally.
good
Yeah.
rush of like, oh my God, I did make it
Yeah,
happen.
we're a little opposite. Like when I'm approaching a film project, I like to do as much pre-production as I can and produce like as much as I can and get everything ready and make sure everything's good to go. So on the day of filming, and then in the moment you can figure out and be creative when things come up. But you just last minute everything.
I mean, sometimes, yeah.
But like sometimes you really can't help it, either
Yeah.
because
Right.
you have an unrealistic deadline that you have to meet because it is
Yeah.
independent filmmaking, or you think, you know, like you can have as much pre-production as you want on something, but the last minute, how many times have you been on a production? Probably every time where something happens that goes wrong that you're like, there's no way in hell that's going to go wrong, and then it does, you know, like. I mean, I still remember on my first movie, one of my lead actors. We shot a day of shooting. Thankfully, it was earlier, like an earlier scene in the movie. And then the next time we shot was maybe like a couple weeks later, and the actor showed up and had shaved his head. And I'm like, what the?
Oh.
Wait, what? Like, do you not understand what continuity is? Like, you had hair in your last scene. And thankfully, it was an earlier scene in the movie, so I like on the fly had to write it into the script of why he shaved his head. But I was just like, you never would expect that to happen, and then it
Yeah.
literally
Yeah,
happened.
like you know the one thing I have like I was shooting something and you know we're it's the day of shooting. We have like the full cast, full crew is there. I get a call. Lead actress drops. I'm like, ooh, rush with the agents, find someone. We made it work, but yeah, you can plan as much as you want, but sometimes stuff just happens.
Yeah, it
Yeah.
does.
But
It's
that didn't that wasn't didn't seem the case with Better Luck Than Chuck. I had a great time being there. That was a
awesome.
blast.
But what like we love to kind of hear the experience because obviously we emailed everybody afterwards, but we didn't have an opportunity to really sit and
Yeah.
talk to y'all about what did you think of it? Like, what was the experience like for you coming into it blind and being involved in it? What like kind of tell us about some of what you loved so much about it.
It was just a lot of fun. Like I remember getting flown in and at the hotel, and the car was going to come and pick me and two other contestants up, and me and the other contestants. So it was Jose and this other gal. I forget her name.
Kristen.
Kristen, Jose and Kristen. So we got to chat in the lobby about horror and stuff, and right there, like this kind of like director producer side of me was like, I was like looking around at us three. I'm like, this casting is great. I'm like, you have Jose over here, this louder than life tattooed metal radio personality. You got me, this filmmaker horror guy, and then over here you have someone who looks like she knows nothing about horror. So I thought that like casting was great, and I'm like, oh, this is a great cast. And then there was the car ride to the show. I don't know if we could talk about this, but in that car ride, there were cameras that were recording, just talking about who we were, what we liked about horror, and what we thought about, this whole thing going in, because they were going to do behind the scenes. And I thought that was a lot of fun, really smart. And then when I got to set, it was really welcoming. That green room was cool. It was like a mini version of the set. There's a TV in the corner, some shag carpet. That was really cool, and it was just fun hanging out with the contestants on my episode, and just getting to know them was cool. I didn't get a chance to talk much to the crew, really. I think I chatted with you for a little bit, Tony, before and after, and I think I chatted with the hosts, the widow and Charlie, after the episode ended. But yeah, it was a lot of fun. It was great. I love being there, and you could feel the energy on set of people wanting to be there and just having a good time. And yeah, and I don't think anything went wrong. Well, maybe something at the very beginning, there was like a light thing,
Oh
but aside from that, it was a lot of fun.
yeah, I think one of the lights like shifted or something, and so they had to fix it. So we probably had to stop recording. I remember that.
Yeah, through my experience on there, I wish I could have been there for every episode and just like hung out. Like that's what it felt like. I'm sure there's some sets where you're like, okay, I want to leave now, but I wanted to just be there the whole time, like just hang
Yeah.
out. And yeah, it was a lot of fun. I loved it.
Yeah, we miss being on set. Especially now that we're getting close to the 1 year anniversary of shooting. I can definitely speak for myself in saying that I missed being there. It was just the way that we had it all set up was so great. And again, every one of those people on that show is a good friend of mine. And so to be working with people that you love, is just a really amazing opportunity, and it just feels so damn good when you're all proud of what you created together. And yeah, like you said, Meredith's work on the set, like building the set, her and the construction head Dustin Hoke, they did such an amazing job building, decorating the set, all the little details of it. The big barracuda in the corner is my father's fish that he caught when he was younger, from the ocean. And so being able to throw all those little details in there, having the Bride of Frankenstein and the Creature from Black Lagoon posters on the stairwell that we got the rights to use from Universal, like as a lifelong horror fan growing up as a kid watching those movies, and now I'm able to show those posters in something that I'm producing, it's like a dream come true. And so many of our crew were also horror fans. Anthony Cousins, who directed Frogman and has done segments on the Scare Package movies, he was one of our camera and lighting guys. And people like him and myself and our trivia writer Brian Wolford, we're all lifelong horror fans. And so to be able to make a horror trivia game show together and hang out with a zombie named Charlie and stuff, it really was a dream come true.
Yeah. I mean,
And
yeah, the studio looked professional. It looked like I was on a studio lot, like with that set. The set looked immaculate. It was great. And that was your design, Meredith?
Mostly, yeah. I mean, obviously, Tony's characters of the Widow and Charlie, were in a basement, and Skeletons in the Closet. And so a lot of that inspiration came to be. So, but in terms of, okay, like I said, remote control was a big inspiration because ironically, they're in a basement too. I don't know if you guys ever watched that MTV show, but it's that feeling of like, we're hanging out, we're on a couch, we're watching, movies together. And so immediately knew I wanted wood paneling. I mean, that was like a must. So the wood paneled walls were a must. But yeah, I mean, it was, I would say I was a big part of it, but a collaboration of a lot of people. And then talking about, should we put a bar in the corner? And, we definitely wanted the staircase to be part of it. And then figuring out the game board. But yes, I mean, I would say a lot of the choices and colors, what color to paint the podiums. And I definitely wanted the orange shag platform was
Nice.
I She said that from
wanted
the
that from,
start.
I can't remember, I'm
Gotta
blanking
have it.
right now on the 70s game show that I
Was it
match
Password?
game.
Match
Yep.
Game?
I think it's
They
the
have a
Match Game, yeah.
two-tiered orange platform, which I really wanted my two tiers, but we ended up doing one because Charlie was sitting in the height of the widow.
Didn't want the
So
widow to trip. I'm like, this poor girl is going to be walking with a nightgown and high heels. She's going to trip and
yeah,
fall on
but
her face.
I want an orange shag platform. That was like literally one of the first things we talked about, and just kind of, invoking a lot of things with horror are, dark and scary and, grungy and, some, when I told my aunt I was making a horror trivia game show, I think she was picturing like a dungeon with bloody chains hanging from it, which is awesome for atmosphere, but the Widow and Charlie have such like a sitcom 70s, and we wanted it to feel like a retro basement. And what we love, one of the things we love about the game show too, is that it is cheerful. There's a comedy and a lighthearted element that you could watch with your kids
Yeah,
who
it's
like horror,
PG-13
so it's like people that are watching horror, you're watching, Terrifier, then you can switch to something like this where you're still engaging in your love of horror, but it's like kind of like just a lighthearted change of pace. So I think we wanted bright colors. I knew once the orange shag came in, then the Chuck logo, or the Better Luck Than Chuck logo came, and then we chose the teal. And I don't know, I think it all came together really well. And we had, like he said, Dustin Hoke built the set. He was our construction foreman, and he was amazing, rolling with the punches. There was a couple like changes last minute that needed to be made, and building that game board wall with the different TVs. We're very proud of the set, and it's in storage and ready to be erected for season two forward.
Can't wait for people to see season one.
I
I
know.
know. We're so damn excited because we know every horror fan is going to at least tune in and test their own knowledge at home. And
Yep.
our sincerest hope is that people enjoy it enough that, like she said, the fact that you can watch this with your kids, whether they're 5 or 15, I think that anybody who's a horror fan, like if we're blessed with a child, you guys have a kid, I assume your son likes horror movies, right?
He does. It was funny because until we met and I took him on set with me for the first time, and he wouldn't watch horror movies because he was in like what, 14, something like that. And he was like, he got to help out on the set, and he came back, and I was like, "How did you have fun?" He's like, "Mom, I watched a cheerleader get stabbed 14 times. I am definitely okay with watching horror movies now because I know how it's done." So then after that, he was like, "Oh no, I can watch them and not be like get the love out of it instead of being scared." So that for him was like, "I got to," he was just like, "Mom, I got to see a cheerleader get stabbed 14 times. Now I know how it's done, and I won't be scared anymore." Like.
That's a lot of fun. And then we cut that scene, but
See, but I just love that because I love the idea of being able to sit on a Friday night and watch an episode of Better Luck Than Chuck and have your kids sitting there with you instead of being like, well, we got to wait for them to go to bed
Yeah.
before we can turn this on because, and I know that a lot of people don't restrict their kids from watching stuff nowadays because you can see everything on YouTube, but I still think that there's, at least from my perspective growing up, there was the things that I was able to watch and there's the things that I wasn't able to, which made me want to watch them more. And I think that
Yeah.
Better Luck Than Chuck possesses enough of the stuff that intrigues adult horror fans, but also appeals to kids. What we would love nothing more than for a few years from now for kids to be dressing up like the Widow and Charlie for Halloween, that type of thing. That would be an absolute dream come true.
Oh, that would be awesome.
And they were great, like actors, like the hosts, like they were funny, and
Yeah.
like they were like the widow was her deadpan humor was
Yeah.
pretty was great, and then the one-liners coming out from Chuck, that was fun. That was really
Yeah.
really
They
cool.
were great. They had instant chemistry, and what we needed to find is because there's such a improv element, right, with the contestants. Even though we weren't filming live, we really didn't cut. We cut between each round of trivia, but we didn't cut, very many times. And so there was really a lot of improv and live type theater, so we needed to find, especially the widow, she needed to have that thinking on her feet. Acting, because even though we had your audition tapes for all the contestants, you never know. There was actually some contestants where their videos were very dynamic and then they were more shy,
Yeah.
which is understandable. I
Yeah.
mean, a lot of people haven't been on camera before. So, yeah, they were wonderful. They would banter and, write things on the side during in between rounds or before the final round. They kind of wrote some things that they wanted to say. So, yeah, we were very thrilled with both of them.
It was a lot of fun to see. So my buddy Johnny, who's been my co-writer on a number of different projects, Skeletons in the Closet, The Muck, A Chance in Hell, which is a film I did 15 years ago at this point. And he's really good at when he wrote their characters in Skeletons in the Closet, he did a really good job of adding the wit and the humor to the marriage dynamic that I wasn't married at the time that I directed Skeletons in the Closet. So I didn't really understand how that relationship dynamic translated into dialogue. And he did such a good job with it that then you transition that now to Better Luck Than Chuck, where you have these characters and it's like they need to be doing that on the fly. So they had their basis of script foundation. And then Adam and Alexis just did such a wonderful job of like of just finding a way to bounce off of each other. And Adam is so good at like saying just stupidly funny things in the heat of the moment that he would react to the contestants either with a bad answer. And his job was to, I told him, your job as Charlie is to razz the contestants because these people are supposed to be the biggest horror fans in the nation. So if they get something wrong, give them shit,
I
And
remember that. I remember that now.
he was very good at doing that, but being playful enough to not offend anybody, which I really appreciate. And that is a fine line of comedy that not a lot of people are good at. But it's just funny because I remember the first time. So Adam and I have been friends for 10 years at this point, and I've always wanted to perpetuate him with Charlie. And then you have the widow, which we knew we needed that again, improv dynamic. And that was very important to be strong with improv. And so when we cast Alexis, she just from her initial video audition video blew us away. She made herself appear, on camera and stuff, and she took the role to heart and found a way to become the widow without receiving any direction from us right off the bat. But the first time that I brought them together to rehearse together, Adam was just saying all these dick and fart jokes. And I'm like, dude, this woman is either going to be offended out of the room or she is going to have a complaint to me after the fact. And I'm going to have to then apologize on your behalf and then tell you to curb your sense of humor. But instead, after 10 minutes of it, she was kind of initially like, it looked like she was a little like, how do I like translate this relationship? But then instantly she was like on board with him, and they got along so incredibly well. that, at the end of each episode, the winning contestant, the finalist from the episode, then sits on the couch with the widow and Charlie, and they kind of do their farewell at the end of the episode. And the like Johnny and I had like a basis of what, if the contestant finds us, so obviously, as the final round for the winning contestant is Charlie's Workshop, which is a scavenger hunt where they have to find hidden hoard items in the back room of the basement and dig through all this stuff. It's very finders keepers or secrets of the hidden temple, any of those game shows that we watched as a kid. And the great thing about it is that, like, I would tell Charlie, okay, look, if they find three items or less, then you give them shit. And if they find four items or more, then the widow's supposed to compliment them. And Adam and Alexis would, between the two rounds of trivia and the final round being shot, which is just a matter of maybe 10 minutes of moving the cameras around and setting up for it, they literally wrote an entire dialogue to bounce off of each other that not only was horror themed 95% of the time, but it actually utilized things that the finalists said during their two rounds of trivia or for their performance in the Charlie's Workshop. And it just, like, there's one that's a whole Shining like talk that Adam goes down, like, using, overlooked these things and, all work and no play. I'm just, I'm like, how did you come up with that?
Yeah, with like no rehearsal. I mean, it was just like they were, they're moving cameras, it's the
Doing
final
some
round is
paper.
over and we're about to set up the final shot. And so it was just so awesome to watch them work. And Tony too. The three of them had their own little, like they were in their own world while, clearly running around doing things and they're jotting things down. And yeah, they were absolutely unbelievable and we're so excited that to see where their chemistry and their, character development goes in future seasons and, anything else that happens with these characters. I think it's fun. And I think, the whole dynamic, it doesn't matter if it's a sitcom. I mean, there's so many sitcoms. How can, Everyone Loves Raymond, King of Queens, he always referenced them as Elle and Peg Bundy. It's just that, like, that works in so many instances. And 90% of the time it's a, a comedy, a sitcom, but I just think it's so fun that, you can mix that element that everyone gets, those marital, like, little nuances. And so, yeah, I love the characters, the actual characters, and then the actors just brought so much to the set, and we're just so thrilled with them.
And what I love too, and will you grab the plug in the computer? Because I'm at 15% battery. What I love too is that it just goes around the side there. Thank you. What I think is really fun about it too is that, again, as I said earlier, the widow and Charlie are obviously characters. They're not people, so it's not like Rob Lowe hosting the floor, or Michael Strahan, or Steve Harvey or any of those people. What I love though is that, the backstory of the widow and Charlie is that she's a witch. She's the wittiest witch of the Midwest, and she killed her husband, Charlie. We don't know why, but she murders him by poisoning him, and then she keeps his body in the basement like Norman Bates with his mother. But because she's a witch, she's able to bring him back to life, but he's a corpse. He's not a zombie. He doesn't walk around. He has to sit on the couch, and he's forced to watch her favorite thing, which is horror movies, whether he likes it or not. And so it's like, what I love about it is that the show starts out where he's pretty much pissed off at her for doing all of this. By the end of from so in episode one, in your episode, it's like he has more of that sarcastic, like, kind of pissiness, like, where he's throwing digs at her throughout the episode. But by the sixth episode, he's come to find a degree of appreciation for what she has done by building this game show with a spell in their basement and giving him this form of entertainment. And it's like you see the evolution of their marriage, of their relationship through the season. And so that's what I really love, is that it's not just a game show. It is a narrative. And if people truly love these characters as much as you grew to love them in the 30 minutes that you were on set, I truly believe that these characters will perpetuate themselves in the horror marketplace, and that people are going to be begging to see more and more seasons of The Widow and Charlie, and even branch off beyond Better Luck Than Chuck. So.
What was one of the creative surprise that came that you didn't anticipate during the season one?
I mean, so many,
Is
I
there any
think.
that stick out like, oh wow, that was really cool. We didn't
I think
expect that.
just the way that so many things came together. For example, one, and if you want to think for a minute, like, so the podiums, okay? We're like, how are we going to make podiums? How are we going to build podiums? And she kind of came up with all these different ideas of how she wanted to look. And ultimately, she ordered podiums from Amazon, which is really funny because I
So
was
tell people
watching, oh, whatever.
that.
I was watching Willy's Wonderland, that Nick Cage movie,
Oh,
and one
that's
of
such a
them
great movie.
in, and it's there, one of those is like the host stand in front of that pizza restaurant is the same podium painted purple. And so she bought like four of them, painted them blue, painted the widows like the cream color, and then she had her print shop cut out the orange kind of like pieces on the front of it. We had, our lighting guys like string LED lights behind the orange thing so that they would light up when the buzzer hit. And like that was one of those things where we were literally like, how the fuck are we going to make this look good? And it just came together.
Nice.
I
Yeah,
mean,
I think another thing too is I don't know, can we give away the hands? Okay. The monster gloves.
which he doesn't know.
Well, the audience doesn't know yet, but they will see when they watch it. But there's just a fun thing we do.
They were cool.
The monster
Oh,
gloves
so
were
you
cool.
did see that. Okay. Okay.
So just and then in general, the widow's magic, she makes the contestants appear and disappear. So, Jazzy, you could talk from your standpoint being a contestant. You think you're just going to be walked onto set, answer some questions, and that's it. But we had you involved. I think it was either our assistant director or Tony came out to say, okay, you have to, jump because the widow's going to perform some magic. So I think that was really cool. I remember early on when some of the discussions happened with that and the monster gloves and some other things that happened, I wasn't sure how it would turn out. But now, especially with the VFX and now our post house and all the editing that's happening with all of that, it's so fun to see. Like the widow's magic is like happening on set. And so I think that was a lot of fun. I think it was kind of one of those things. I was a little hesitant on how it would turn out, but for me, that was my creative surprise for sure.
As a contestant, like doing those little acting bits, right? Like you, it's not much, but you're having to jump to get magically put in there. Like that stuff's fun. It makes you feel more involved in the whole process, or the glove thing at the very beginning. I think in the green room, each one of us were assigned creature gloves, and I forget how that happened, but I do remember like so those little bits are just a lot of fun. Like it's more fun than, I mean, this was the first game show I've been on, but it was definitely more fun to be more involved than just go on, do the thing, and then go back. So that's
And
cool.
I think that that's really like, again, all of it. It's like whether an idea was planned during development of the show, like with our building the pitch deck and stuff, and how it evolved to what it actually looked like on set, like the monster gloves, to the magic, to even, the stairs. We were originally, the stairs were going to go straight down. And then at the last minute, we're like, well, we should have them bend at the bottom so that she's kind of coming down the stairs towards the audience, towards the cameras. And we're like, well, how do we fill in that corner? And Meredith's like, why don't we put a flower box in that corner? One of those old school
Yeah,
mid-century modern
70s, like
flower boxes.
limestone, yeah.
But even like the game board, we're like, how is that going to look? And you didn't even on set, you didn't get to see how the categories animate and all that. Like in post-production, we have all the category screens animate so that the titling pops up and moves and stuff. And
That's cool.
it's yeah, I mean, but even honestly, the director videos, I think that was probably one of the biggest surprises for us. Being able to have a 20-minute Zoom with Mike Flanagan, who is, in my opinion, the best horror filmmaker on the planet right now, and have his willingness to include those questions in the show, was a dream come true for somebody like me.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, and all the other people, like you, your episode had a question from him, BJ McDonald, who did, I think Hatchet 3, he did Studio 666. That's pretty badass. And
Yeah.
we got Gary Sherman, who directed Dead and Buried and Poltergeist
Oh my.
3, and just so many different amazing people that were willing to be like, oh, this is a cool idea. Yeah, we'll send you in a couple
Yeah.
of questions. It was fun.
Nice.
Yeah. And the sponsors too. I mean,
Yeah.
besides Universal, just all the other amazing sponsors that gave us, some cool prizes and swag for you
Yeah.
guys. I
Yeah.
think,
Right. Like
yeah.
Severin Films, Trick or Treat Studios, Terror Films,
Yeah.
Muga Film Festival, just so many different awesome Panic Fest. Yeah, just lots of really amazing, Cavity Colors. Just I could keep going. It's
Hell
like,
yeah.
every single thing that we were giving to contestants were things that I was like, well, I'll take it home.
Yeah,
You're like, I'm just gonna.
we all got like our favorite horror movie t-shirt from Fright Rags.
Yeah.
Yeah, they specifically, because on your contestant application, you had to put your top three. So they not only gave us shirts, we gave them our contestant list and what their favorite movies were. So that was really awesome of them.
Yeah,
And it felt personalized for you guys.
huge
Fright
shout
Rags.
out to Ben, who runs Fright Rags. Ben is just he's a solid dude, lifelong horror fan. I zoomed with him a few months ago and showed him an episode edit, and he was like answering the questions while it was playing. Exactly what we want audiences at home to do, and he was like, "I love it. I'm so proud to be a part of it. I think Fright Rags is perfect for this." He's like, "I'm so happy that we got involved." So I'm thrilled for people to see this thing when it comes out.
Well, speaking of,
Yeah, speaking of, when do we get to see a trailer, a teaser, or where can we watch it?
well, we're doing some festival screenings, coming up, and we can't really announce those just yet. The
Yeah,
festivals don't
coming
want us to
soon,
talk
though,
about it.
depending on when your audience sees this. Hopefully, we'll have some news about our festivals. We have a couple of things lined up. In terms of where and when, we are still in discussions and negotiations with some
Nice.
potential places where it's going to land.
I
So we
hope it
can't.
lands at the biggest place.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah,
I,
we
it,
appreciate
it has a home and it has an audience. We do know that. It's just finding the right partner that wants to not only, air the first season, but perpetuate it. So I think that's where a lot of the discussions lie is what is the long-term goal for this? We are excited. Post-production is, finally complete, and it's been a long road for the last year, and we're so excited to share it with audience.
I'm excited.
Everyone who has, followed us on Facebook and Instagram and all that, thank you for being patient. I know there were so many people who applied to be on the show, and please know the people that were not chosen, we had a very hard time narrowing it down, and we appreciate your enthusiasm and your excitement for the show, and we appreciate everyone being patient. It's coming soon. We can't divulge anything more than that, but it is coming soon, we
Yeah,
promise.
even though I was already a contestant, I feel like I just want to keep sending in audition tapes because they're fun, even though I know I won't get on.
Well, we have talked about doing an All Stars episode where, or like a redemption episode, rise from the dead and come back. So there will be opportunities for potential contestants to come back again.
Yeah.
But yes, you should share your application video when you post this podcast so that people can see, because we don't have a problem with you doing that if you want to.
Yeah,
Okay.
you absolutely
I
should.
need to.
It was such a fun video to shoot.
I had my buddy Sean Springer, he shot it. He's like one of my, best filming buddies. He helps me on pretty much everything I do. But I was like, hey, do you just want to help me shoot this audition video? And we just knocked it out in a couple hours and with some
It
fun
was
ideas.
awesome.
Yeah.
It was
It's so
honestly, and to those listening who want to possibly apply for future seasons, I think creativity was a big part of it. Showing your personality and showing, you don't have to be a filmmaker or a professional editor, but I think just having fun with it, I think showing off your personality and all that was a big part. We do have people that we are, hey, if there's a season two, we are calling you back. So if you applied and didn't get chosen, please
Yeah.
do not worry. The way we chose people was based on their knowledge of horror, their creativity and their personality from their videotapes, and just getting a diverse mix. Like you said, when you showed up to the green room, you're like, look at these three different types of people. We wanted each episode to have, different age ranges, just everything. And I think we did a good job at that. You know, we're excited. There were so many people we wanted. If we could have done 15 episodes our first season, we would have, but keep playing. Keep
Who's the
playing.
oldest contestant? Did you have like an 85-year-old lady or anything?
No, 50s. I'd say
Was it
50s.
50s?
Yeah, I'd say
All right.
50s.
I'm so glad I wasn't the oldest contestant.
No, youngest was probably early 20s, maybe early to mid 20s. Yeah, we will, because Kristen, on your episode, she was still in grad school, I believe.
And I mean, we had all different age ranges apply too. I think we had older than that apply.
And from all over the US, from Massachusetts and New York, New Jersey, all the way down to like Florida, to California, Colorado, Washington, Oregon, Texas, all over the place.
Yeah, I can't wait. Can't wait to see it. Is there any cool detail that you can give out that you haven't said before, or is everything else all hush hush hush?
Yeah, I think at this point, like since we're starting to do some screenings of festivals to build our grassroots audience base,
Keep everything.
and just generate some interest in the show that doesn't already exist, I think that we're going to start using some socials and stuff to promote more. So we will start releasing things, but it's
Teasers are coming soon for
yeah,
sure.
it's just a tough it's a tough landscape to navigate with distribution, because on one hand you want people to see what you've done and you want to build your audience that way, but then on the other hand you don't want to release too much too early because people will forget about it. And so there's that fine line of if we knew we could generate a fan base similar to, like, let's say what Terrifier has done and how popular Art the Clown is, then there's no reason why we wouldn't be promoting it. But if you generate 5% of that excitement, then it diminishes, and the longer you have to wait. And since we don't have a specific date yet of when we're releasing this, it's hard for us to do that just yet.
Well, all I can say is I had a blast doing it, and I know that when it comes out, everyone's gonna love it, and I can't wait to see it.
We appreciate that.
Kind of have some other kind of fun questions. So Tony, you worked with God, how do you say her name?
Shanae Grimes.
Shanae Grimes Veach on The Rake. And she was, as most people know, she was the first kill in Scream 4. Do you, Tony, have any kind of stories that you talked with her about Wes Craven or Scream?
Honestly, no. I mean, I being a horror fan, I did mention that to her, like, oh, I thought it was awesome that you were in one of the movies. It's funny because, like, she was cast the day before her first day of shooting on The Rake. So we really didn't have a chance. I didn't audition her or anything. There was a handful of different named actresses in LA that I had zoomed with, for the two lead female roles, and ultimately that role was one that was kind of left open, and then our co-producers in LA grabbed her and cast her in it and flew her out. So she showed up the first morning she was shooting and didn't really get to dig in too much to the pleasantries of getting to know each other as friends, as much as it was like, okay,
All
now I
right,
can,
go, go. Let's
yeah, this is what Ashley needs to be like. This is what I see. All I can really say about Shanae is just that I appreciate the patience, first of all, with that character. I think that character really involves, it's someone who has a lot of mental trauma, and her ability to just get into that character with zero preparation, and just kill it, in my
She
opinion.
was great
But,
in that.
super great,
She did a really tremendous job at playing Ashley. And I just think that the entire ensemble with that, I think that Joey Bocicci is just an incredible just asshole. I mean, he was the Jack Torrance. My goal with The Rake was to make the atmosphere of The Shining and Alien with, basically the monster from Alien, but with the location of The Shining, albeit not being a large hotel.
Speaking of location.
Yeah, was it the same house from the Raked and the Skeletons in the Closet?
No, so the Rake House was just one that we rented in
Okay.
upstate Illinois for 2 months, and we shot there. And then the Skeletons in the Closet house is a house that I lived in for 7 years with our cinematographer and co-producer Rob Stern. Sarah lived there sometimes too because Rob and Sarah are married. And then it's our friend Jim Peterson's house who has been living in it since his childhood. And so he's just never updated it. It's still very 80s, which I love
Yeah.
because,
It's an awesome house.
I'm
Yeah.
a very sentimental
It's
person.
quite a few things.
Yeah, so
I
it
keep
was.
saying Jim's house needs its own IMDb.
It
It's been
does.
in quite a few.
Yeah. That's odd because there was something about like the main babysitter story in Skeletons in the Closet and like the main living room of the Rake that was similar. It could have been set deck or something. I don't know why it seemed like it. Like, is this the same house or not? Yeah.
It's very much the set deck. Sarah Sharp was the she worked on Skeletons, and then she was
Okay.
the production designer on Skeletons, or sorry, on the Rake. And what I said was very important to me, like set wise, was that it had that kind of 70s look to it because I pictured a ranch style house. I pictured that scene in the Rake where they're like in kind of that living room area and they're looking out at Ashley smoking on the back porch. They're like kind of standing in like a sliding glass door kind of threshold. And we actually built these like wooden panels that covered the two like windows on the edges of the sliding glass. And I had my buddy who's an artist, he created the Overlook Hotel maze is the pattern on those wood panels because a lot of 60s and 70s houses had those kind of room dividers. And so it was that it was the orange and the greens and the yellows and the browns that just to me set a really great kind of aesthetic for atmospheric horror as opposed to, a modern house, which is all white walls and really nice and fancy looking. It just wasn't suited for that type of atmosphere.
Yeah, nice. So, going back to Revealer, is that the one you both worked on that together? Were you there like on the day, like doing set deck, or was it just the graphic design stuff? Right.
No, I didn't work on that at all. It was just her.
And I was just a day player for pre-production.
Okay, gotcha.
It was a COVID set. I want to say they filmed in April or May.
Yeah,
That
no,
ma that makes a lot of
that
sense
makes a
then.
lot of sense. Yeah.
Because when I watched it, I was like, I love single location films, and I thought the idea of her being stuck in a stripper booth, that's like, how do you make that work? And I thought that was really fun.
So I was only on that set for pre-production for a couple of days, but
Yeah,
it
and
was awesome.
they
It was
shot that
such a
like
cool
3 hours away from us, so
set.
it wasn't like we could just go and help out every day.
And I had seen The Stylist. Were you guys on set for that one?
Pre-production.
Pre-production?
No, they were shooting. They were
You're right.
shooting, but we were only there for like, because again, this is when I was working overnights at the water plant. So I would work 4 days on and then 4 days off. And so on the 4 days that we had off, I'd get off of work at noon. We got in the car, drove down to Kansas City, which is a 7 hour drive from where we're at in Chicago.
I
So I had worked midnight to noon. Didn't I drive?
believe so.
I worked midnight to noon, drove 7 hours, and then we were there for the 4 days. Meredith and I stayed in an apartment with Najara and her husband, who was the first AD or line producer, one of the two. And we were there for the 4 days doing set deck stuff and whatnot. So
Nice. I mean, I got like one more question. Can I buy a bottle of Widow's Kiss?
I actually, yeah,
I
I've got a little one and then I have the bigger one downstairs. I should see if I have. We were gonna do. I love that, Jesse. We were gonna do one of the things with the game show was we were gonna have like get out of jail free cards, so to speak, where Widow, if you got a question right, there were bonus questions, but then there was also we were going to do ones where if you got a question right, you would get a Widow's potion. And we had three different potions that the contestant would then have appear on their podium. I mean, we still do that, but
Anyway,
you know, in the next
interesting.
season,
That's good.
but like it would appear, and then you could use that for something. We didn't know what, whether it's extra time in the workshop or something, but I'd have to see if I know where those are.
Because
But yeah.
that was a commercial in your film Skeletons in the Closet, and I didn't put it together until after that the girl bought one, right? Yeah,
So she put
I
it in her
didn't.
business.
She got that right
I
away.
was like, that's awesome. The commercials in that one was like my favorite part.
And then I was after the fact. I'm like, oh, that's how she did. That's how she got Widow's kiss to kill the babysitter. Spoiler
Yeah,
alert.
and the ad, the
Yeah, spoiler
advertisement
alert.
at the end, you know, of the comic book that she's reading, it says that, you know, if you order, you get a free bottle, like in the commercial. Yeah, so she puts that into the, yeah,
One thing that I
exactly.
liked about Skeletons in the Closet too, sorry to keep going, but I liked
Oh,
that it
you're
was
fine.
a wraparound story inside of a wraparound story. Like you had Widow and Charlie in there doing their thing, which, and then you had another wraparound, which was the babysitter and the girl. And I hadn't seen that before. It's usually just your one story and then you get your films, but there was like two. I thought that was really inventive.
Thank you. Yeah, it was kind of a it was a solution to a dilemma. And you know, the quick backstory is that Chop Shop was an anthology film that was supposed to be four different films from four different filmmakers. Rob Stern was shooting all of them. And so we produced these four shorts that were all about 25, 30 minutes long, and we were going to put them out as a feature called Chop Shop. And then two of the filmmakers, we spent like 2 or 3 years, like where we did The Rake. We started producing World of Death. And so we were kind of doing all these other things on the side, and they kind of took precedence to finishing Chop Shop. And so eventually, two of the filmmakers kind of took their movies and did their own thing with them. And so it got to 2016, where I pitched Rob and the other director, Ben, on the idea of saying, like, look, you know, we want to release Grandma O'Malley's Pantry, which was my short film, and The Dismantler, which was Ben's short film. We want to release these, but how do we release them? And so I've had since college this idea of the widow and Charlie in my head, this dual host dynamic of Elvira married to the Crypt Keeper, basically, because I'd never seen that before. And so I just pitched them. I said, what if you guys are down to finish this movie using this as an idea? I think that's a great way to do it. But to add that extra layer of their number one fan at home watching it, that was kind of like a product of me not only living in Jim's house and watching TV in that living room every night, but also being a kid in the 80s. And like one of my most vivid memories as a young child being introduced to horror is I was at my grandma and grandpa's house, and my grandma's the big horror fan in the family that made my dad a horror fan, and then that's what made me one. She was babysitting me, and she was watching Tales from the Dark Side, the TV show.
Nice.
They had the big old wooden TV console, and it was the episode that Tom Savini directed with Lizzie, the little monster that comes out of this closet from this, you know, this girl is going to college and renting this dorm room or this apartment room, and this monster comes out of the closet at night and like stalks her, and it just terrified the shit out of me because I was probably 4 or 5 years old, and I absolutely loved it. And so that was Jamie is me and every other kid from the 80s and 90s that grew up watching stuff laying on the floor in front of that big old television set. And it just worked out great. You know, I'm bummed because I always wanted to do a sequel and it's never going to happen, but I always wanted Jamie to be the babysitter in the sequel, and she introduces the kid that she's watching to Skeletons in the Closet, and it kind of goes from there. But
Well, who knows, maybe in like season 4 or 5 or better luck than Chucky can work that those characters into the show somehow.
I don't think it's going to happen, unfortunately. But you know, I would love to. Obviously, I'm very fond of Skeletons in the Closet. It's something I'm very proud of, and I think it turned out very well, considering we spent no money on it, and it was all kind of the weekend shoot type things. I'm very proud of how well it turned out.
Oh,
But
for sure. Well, is there anything else you guys want to plug before we get on out of here?
Well, obviously, you know, we would love for people to find Better Luck Than Chuck on Instagram. I mean, it's pretty easy to search Better Luck Than Chuck. You know, we'd love for you to follow us on Instagram. We have a Facebook page too, which I believe is the same, Better Luck Than Chuck. And we're going to start adding more content to it as
Yeah.
we get closer to our release.
Yeah, our festival announcement will probably be within March or April for sure. So we're excited about that.
Nice.
Potentially a second festival where we'll be doing a live version of the show. We're not sure yet, but we're working that out too. I think that would be a fun thing for fans at a festival to watch a live version of the trivia show. So more to come. And then of course, as soon as we get news of where fans can tune in, we will be posting on our social media.
Yeah.
Awesome.
And then otherwise, just on my end, as the Screambox programmer, if you don't have a subscription to Screambox already, I highly recommend it. It's $5.99 if you pay monthly. Otherwise, you can get it for a year for, I think, $4.99 a month. Right now, we have a 3 month deal where you can do $2.99 a month. We just got Terrifier 3 on the platform. We've got Toxic Avenger, the remake, coming out later this year, which is awesome. Peter
I'm
Dinklage.
excited for
I'm
that.
excited for that. It's so fucking fun. It's such a great movie. I'm really excited because now that I'm the head programmer at Screambox, I'm really being brought into the mix of what we're acquiring for the platform and kind of the curation of the content. So, I plan on just trying to get as many awesome 70s and 80s and 90s movies on there to help pad the new releases and exclusives that we have coming out. And obviously we have our show Bloody Bites that you've got short films in, and so many other things that I'm just really excited about. So
Yeah,
if you
subscribe to Screenbox, everyone. See, look, I'm even a subscriber.
boom, hell yeah. Yeah,
So
if you haven't
do it.
checked it,
Go
if
get
you haven't
Screenbox,
subscribed.
everybody. Well, I'm it was nice to have you guys on.
Yes, thank you so much.
Yeah.
Yeah, we
Thank
always
you so much.
love talking to couples in horror since we are.
Yeah,
So
maybe this should be a regular bit, just talking with married couples in horror.
it's a great idea.
Yeah, and in production too. I just think it's
You know what we gotta do?
what.
We gotta find a way for you guys to do a podcast with the Widow and Charlie. Would you do
Oh
that?
my God,
That
yes.
yes, let's
That's
do it. Let's do it. Because
awesome.
like
I remember you saying no to that.
our podcast, like our initial graphics are us in our tuxedo
In a
and
wedding as zombies.
as zombies,
Okay.
and we're
That's
planning
awesome.
on like upping the game with the podcast soon and like shooting some an intro where we're both kind of like dead and kind of things. So
Oh
that's
yeah.
coming soon. But yeah, that's a good idea.
You
I would
should
love.
do that because like adding production elements like that to your podcast are going to help it excel so much beyond, all the other video podcasts. I think that's a tremendous idea.
Yeah, that's
Should
fun.
so here's the question. Should we do that podcast with them in their characters or them
Oh,
as
100%. That's
yeah.
what I so here's my thought is we've got a festival that we might be doing this live event at, okay? If we do that, we'll talk to you guys. It would be in June, okay? And maybe we could find a way for you guys because we would have part of the set. We'd have the couch and some of those things. So maybe we would be able to find a way to get you to Zoom with them for 25 minutes or something while they're sitting on the couch and in character if you'd want to do that.
Totally game for
Yes,
that. That sounds like a lot of
absolutely.
fun. Yeah, use me for any kind of promotion you want, and that sounds like a great idea. Yeah.
Cool. Awesome.
Well, heck yeah.
Our Bloody Marys are dead, so are we.
So, thanks again, Tony and Meredith, and we'll catch you next time.
Yeah, thank you guys for having
Yeah,
us on the
thank you. It
show.
was a lot of fun.
Thanks for the enthusiasm towards Better Luck Than Chuck, and we appreciate everything that you guys are doing to help support it, get more fans to pay attention.
Screenbox,
Absolutely.
Better Luck Than Chuck. Woo!
The Bloody Mary.